Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
You know, I often talk, Sue Thomas, of my affinity for Sin City, for Las Vegas. I go out there a lot. I visit there because my good friend Rick is out there. And I like seeing shows and comedy, et cetera. I've been to Sphere 3 times, and there's a rumor going around about somebody who might perform at Sphere that's going to just, I think it's going to get you to want to go to Sphere.
Really?
You just wait on that.
All right.
Okay? I'll bring that up a little bit later this hour. I may or may not be serious about that with you, but you're going to find it interesting. We'll have Dan Reardon join us. You know, the British Open controversy with Bryson is actually really interesting. It's all the talk and the buzz of the golf world. Rory McIlroy kind of weighed in and criticized Bryson. It's just sad for me because I hated him. Everybody hated Bryson when he was younger, right?
Well, yeah.
Because he was an immature jackass. Mm. So then he becomes this very lovable creature on YouTube and on Instagram, and he's playing golf with President Trump and all these things. And then last week, he kind of reverts to jackass form.
Yeah, what's that about?
I don't know, but we'll talk with Dan about that coming up. We have the deputy director of the FBI on the line, Andrew Bailey, our former attorney general here in Missouri, just off of a great successful stint protecting people at World Cup sites across the country. Hello, Andrew Bailey. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on, my friend.
How much of a relief is it that the last month is over? But, man, you really, you know, you think about the number of games, and you guys have kind of said it. It was like preparing for, like, 78 different Super Bowls, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this was an enormous event of historic proportion. 56 field offices covering 11 host cities. We had to cross-level different assets and resources to make sure we had enough coverage. And, look, Major League Baseball is still going on. America 250. State fairs, all those normal events that happen every summer are layered on top of the massive security concern for a World Cup that saw record-setting attendance. So it was a big success. Really proud of our partners at the local level, especially across the state in Kansas City, showing the world the very best Missouri has to offer.
Yeah, so what was, you know, obviously the FBI is kind of running point on some of this, but you had to have all this cooperation for so many different law enforcement agencies across the country to pull this thing off and to make sure everyone was on the same page.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not just our local partners in the host cities. It's also foreign partners in both Canada and Mexico. People forget Canada had 2 host cities, hosted several matches. Mexico had 3 host cities. And some of the security concerns in Mexico are, you know, really are extreme. And so having that buy-in at that level is critically important. And again, you know, we can't do our jobs at the FBI without those local partners, the brave men and women in uniformed law enforcement. It's sharing intelligence. It's sharing security concerns and ensuring that we're using the legal authorities provided to us to keep the American people safe.
I don't know why I noticed it yesterday during the final, perhaps more than earlier, but when they were showing some of the wider shots of the field and the fans, I mean, there was a police officer that was about every 5 feet away on that field circling the stadium. I mean, I don't think you guys were taking any chances with that crowd yesterday or probably throughout the whole tournament. That was pretty impressive. And I just kind of happened to notice it because I'm like, wow, there's a lot of security, a lot of security.
Yeah, for sure. One, and there's security inside the stadium, there's security outside the stadium, there's security throughout the city to secure the transportation routes into and out of the stadium to ensure that in a mass casualty event that the right resources and assets can deploy in a timely manner. And it's critically important that we have those arteries open, that we have that presence, that what you see and also what you don't see.
Yeah, no doubt. Andrew Bailey is here, our former attorney general, is doing great work at the FBI as deputy director. Let me ask you about a story of the day. Do you know anything about what happened in New York City earlier today at the federal building when you had someone who apparently was a former Army member who basically lit off, they say, an incendiary device. It looked like he poured gasoline in front of that building and some fireworks and just set it on fire.
Yeah, that's right. Look, the investigation's ongoing. We're working with New York City Police Department on that investigation, and we're going to ensure that we hold this individual responsible and anyone that worked with him. Look, the president signed NSPM 7. That's a policy memo directing all federal law enforcement to dismantle, disrupt, and ultimately indict criminal enterprises that are left-wing violent extremists. And that appears to be some of the motivation here, right? I mean, the guy was very anti-ICE. And so people that don't like the immigration laws, they need to petition Congress to change them, not try to blow up federal buildings and harm innocent bystanders.
This is something, though, that you're also working very hard on at the office, is trying to make sure that these, you know, because these threats online with the violent extremism, I'm shocked sometimes when I see some of the things that people post on there, and you don't know what's true and what's not true, but you have to take it seriously.
Yeah, Mark, look, there's a scary new threat stream. It's the confluence. It's the merger of radical extremism and modern terrorism. It's called nihilistic violent extremists. They prey on our children. They live on the dark web, but they create victims on the open web. And the Federal Bureau of Investigation has increased the total number of arrests of these NVE groups by 500%. These are the individuals who target isolated children. They exploit those children. They convince those children to commit acts of self-harm, acts of animal abuse, ultimately suicide, and even mass casualty events. And so being adept at operating on both the dark web and the open web to protect victims and hold these violent extremists, these terrorists accountable is critical. And we're seeing success. All 56 of our field offices now have open investigations into these online NVE groups. And I'm, as a parent, I find it abhorrent. It's frightening. These NVE extremists, they find kids on gaming platforms. That's where they're grooming children to these violent acts.
Because that's where these kids are, really. That is scary. Look, when it comes to all this stuff online, you know, I have a great segment. I know you're a fan of the show. If you're ever around, you know, driving through on Tuesdays at 5:30, my friend George Rosenthal is a great sponsor at ThrottleNet. We do these Tech Talk Tuesday segments. And a lot of it, you know, focuses on AI, but a lot of it also focuses on the sophistication of the malfeasance that's going on out there with these scams. And, you know, even ordinarily smart people, I've almost fallen for a couple of the phishing scams. But these things, I'm sure, when they get to the level of your office, are at an unbelievable, you know, level of, you know, confusion and comprehension and just really, really complicated and dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there are so many other crimes associated with these online cyber scams. And it costs Americans up to tens of billions of dollars every year in Southeast Asia. They actually have scam center compounds. Where, for instance, in Cambodia and the Philippines and other countries, the criminal enterprises will create these campuses fenced in with buildings and dining facilities and entertainment facilities. And then they'll recruit people from other countries online to then come and work in these scam centers. But then they enslave them. They take their passport. They take their visa. They don't let them leave the compound. And in a single day, they can enrich themselves to the tune of millions of dollars by using AI tools and modern technology to rip off working American families and families in other countries as well. And so we've been hard at work to dismantle those enterprises and hold those wrongdoers accountable, bring them back to the United States to face the full weight of American justice.
So is that, now that it's post-World Cup, just curious about your focus in your particular role as Deputy Director of the FBI. Is that where the focus is right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I was just in Bangkok, Thailand to meet with the Royal Thai Police. They've seized one of these scam compounds. And so we're working through the evidence now and coming up with new innovative strategies. Again, sometimes it's about arrests and indictments. Sometimes it's about disruption and dismantling these enterprises. But that's what the FBI does. We play a unique role in the criminal justice system, and it's complex international investigations. And we take the enterprise approach. We don't want to just pick off the lower tier criminals. We want to dismantle the entire operation. And so that absolutely is a focus moving forward. And the president came to office with a promise to make America safe again. Sometimes we can do that by taking the fight to the enemy overseas.
Hey, I hope you're getting back here to see the family enough. I know how busy you are, but thanks for checking in with us here on this Monday. And hopefully a little bit of a sigh of relief now that the World Cup is over as well.
Yeah, for sure, Mark. Always appreciate you, man. Hopefully I can come see you in studio one of these days next time I'm back in town.
Do it. We'll start talking a little bit more about Mizzou football. They had SEC Media Days today, and Ahmad Hardy has been cleared to practice, so that's big news. Thank you, Andrew. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, see you. I'm going to tomorrow on the show, I'm going to have Hans von Spakovsky, who is one of the great experts at Heritage, And we're going to talk about the SAVE Act. And I want to talk about the SAVE Act right here from a different perspective, because I always look at things and I try to look at things through different lenses. And I'm a proponent of the SAVE Act. I think most people in this country, even Democrats, agree that you should have to show a photo ID to vote and maybe to register to vote. But Lisa Murkowski, who is a Republican senator from Alaska, you know, you have Susan Collins up there in Maine, who is likely, even if Graham Plattner was in that race, likely to still win her seat because she's been up there for a long time. Lisa Murkowski is like one of those Republicans as well. Susan and Lisa vote on the same page, sometimes against Republicans. They represent, you know, states that aren't maybe quite as red as where we live. But Lisa Murkowski wrote something in the Wall Street Journal that caught my attention, and I think there's legitimate complaints in here. Hans, who is a huge proponent of the SAVE Act, is going to respond to this tomorrow. But here's what she said in the Wall Street Journal. She said, President Trump made his case for the SAVE Act on Thursday, claiming the security of our elections is at stake. While I support the bill's core tenets, ensuring that only American citizens vote and requiring identification when voting, I remain opposed to it. Now, I didn't know this until I read this piece in the journal. She says, why? Because it would have serious negative effects in Alaska, and the current text does not allow for the time and resources needed for proper implementation. I'll circle back to that here in her specifics in a second, but one of the big stories that kind of went viral in meme form late last week was the notion that on some of these things related to elections, you have to show an ID to get your unlimited pasta deal at the Olive Garden. So some of us were making that point that right. You have to show, and the Olive Garden was forced to come out with a statement to say, yeah, because the name has to match up with the person who has the never-ending pasta plate or whatever the hell it is. So that's a little different because, you know, we're talking about very few people are going to agree on the photo ID, disagree on that. I mean, it's an overwhelming. I've been talking about voter ID for 3 decades, believe it or not. It's never been something that's been, you know, proven to me that people can't get. I made this offer. I've talked about this before when I was on KMOX. I begged people in the city who were against this idea. This goes back like 15 years. Bring me one person who can't vote because of this, right?
Yeah.
Now, she puts this into a little bit different perspective because Alaska is not exactly Missouri. So I think that she deserves to have, you know, the complaints heard out. And she says that as written, the Save America Act isn't a simple fix to safeguard elections, as proponents claim. It would impose costly new barriers and prevent some, perhaps many, from voting. And this is where she gets kind of specifics, because she says Alaskans can register to vote online right now. There is no evidence of significant fraud anywhere in that system, yet the bill would effectively end online voter registration by requiring voters to present documentary proof of U.S. citizenship in person to an election official. Now, in my mind, in our contiguous states, that shouldn't be difficult at all,
no.
Right? There's offices everywhere. There's population everywhere. But this is different in Alaska. She says Alaska only has 6 election offices where that requirement could clearly be met, right? 6 places in a state that is more than twice the size of Texas, where roughly 80% of our communities and about 20% of our population are not connected by road. So she even says, and have you been there to Alaska?
I haven't.
Beautiful. I highly recommend it. I recommend it when you're younger, not older. A lot of older people wait to go to Alaska. Don't do that. Sue, you would love it because you're an active person. You can ride your bike.
Ooh.
You can kayak. Ooh. You can do very active things. Becky and I did a helicopter trip to a glacier.
That's
and
fun.
We literally had a guide to our own. It was just us two and this guide kind of, you know.
That's cool.
Oh, it was amazing. So anyway, side note, I digress about Alaska. But what she says makes sense because if you've been up there, you kind of know the terrain and the geography, and it's very, very small populations. And then it takes a while to get to the next place that has a small population. But she talks about Ketchikan and Kodiak. They have Department of Motor Vehicle offices where Alaskans can register to vote. And that's pretty easy for people there, right? But let's say you're an 18-year-old living in Savunga. That is a remote island in the Bering Sea. And if you wanted to register to vote for the first time, if the SAVE Act passes, your only option would be to buy a ticket on Bering Air to Nome, which runs about $780 round trip. A night at the Aurora Inn would be more than $300. So not counting food and local transportation, it would cost more than $1,000 just to register to vote. That doesn't really make sense, right? So she says maybe you're a fisherman on Alaska, out on the Aleutian Islands. The flight to Anchorage, the closest election office, some 800 miles away, would cost you about $1,500 round trip. You would also need hotel, cabs, food while in Anchorage because it would be impossible to fly in, register, and return home the safe day. So she says those examples assume that you have on hand the documents necessary to prove your citizenship. But take one more. You're an 85-year-old native elder born in your parents' house 18 years before statehood. Getting a certified copy of your birth certificate, especially if you never have had one, would be incredibly difficult. And she says that many native people rely on tribal identification to register to vote. But the Save America Act would only require the card to show that the applicant's place of birth was in the U.S., along with a photo and an expiration date. While many tribes' identification cards have a photo, not all have expiration dates, and few include a place of birth. She says only about half of Alaskans have passports. Many have changed, women have changed their names after marrying or divorcing.
Right.
They wait 1 or 2 months to receive certified copies of their vital records. Some of these complaints have been out there, before, not just because of Alaska and the geographical challenges, if you will, but, these have been pointed out by Democrats as well. So she also says beyond registration is voting itself. Alaska is a no-excuse state, meaning that you can vote by mail without providing a reason. More than 50,000 Alaskans did that in the 2024 general election. Voting by mail is an important alternative in Alaska, particularly in small communities that don't have places or poll workers for in-person voting. I mean, I got to say that sounds reasonable, right? I mean, if you're living in Alaska, especially you get to November where there's maybe 40 minutes of daylight or something like
right.
that. You're probably not going to want to show up in person. It is different. So one of the things that I think a lot of people listening right now would say, okay, that makes sense. But what about offering solutions to that? Well, Lisa Murkowski says that she has done that. She's filed several amendments when it came to the Senate floor. No effort has been made to correct those flaws. She says, I've also asked for the effective date of the legislation to be pushed back to give all states enough time for implementation. As written, the bill would take effect immediately, but it is unreasonable to expect immediate compliance. This bill would force many states to modify their election laws. Some legislatures might need special sessions to do that. I think that's reasonable to have a little bit more time built in, but I'd never really heard these specifics because I'll be honest with you, as someone who supports this, supports the SAVE Act, supports, making sure that we have safe and fair elections, I'll admit that that's a perspective I did not think of.
Right. I had not considered.
And Hawaii probably has similar challenges, right? So is there, and this is what I'll ask Hans tomorrow, is there a way to get Lisa Murkowski on board? I don't know if you have some exemptions, but they can do anything in legislation.
I would
but
think.
Her complaints and why she's voting against it for her particular state, they
make
sense.
Yeah.
They don't sound, look, the Democrats are opposed to it for no reason other than they're just opposed to it. They don't really, they make up things and they say things that really won't happen, just like the Georgia election law. And Larry David created an entire season of Curb Your Enthusiasm about that. And it was based on a false premise that people in line couldn't even get water. It's much more, I don't even want to talk about it. It's so stupid that thing was manipulated the way that it was. And by the way, they have more voters in Georgia than they've ever had in the past.
Uh-huh.
Dan Reardon's going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about Bryson DeChambeau becoming a big baby again. But first, traffic here, and we got another segment. I got some stuff I still want to go over audio-wise. That's coming up next.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
We got a big show shaping up for tomorrow. The Hall of Famer, Fred Bottomer, is nailing down those guests.
How about Fred Bottomer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
That's exactly right. We have Tom Albas, U.S. Attorney for Eastern Missouri on criminal justice reform. Hans von Spakovsky on the Save America Act. Steve Ellman, who is the St. Charles County executive, who at first was not going to run for re-election, but because Bill Eigel, who was on the show on Friday, got in. He decided to run. So we talked with Steve because we've been talking to all of the main candidates for St. Charles County Executive. And then, of course, tomorrow is Tech Talk Tuesday, and George Rosenthal will be here. I don't know what to say about this next piece of audio. I have some stuff saved up for audio cut of the day. But things like this are going more and more viral. And this happened. I got to figure out where this happened. I'm not exactly sure what city it is. Let's see here. I could probably figure it out from the body cam. And it did happen last year, but now it's going viral because somebody requested the body cam. So you have a situation where there was a trans person who was a man who decided to go into a women's, you know, bathroom at a mall, and the women were not very happy about that. So the cop showed up, and just the whole exchange that the cop has with this person is just quite something.
What's the problem?
Why do you let those kids get away with this? They are not supposed to be here.
If you don't lower your voice, I am going to put handcuffs on you, and I'm going to take you to a Baker Act facility. You lower your voice,
try it.
Listen to that. I mean, he basically says that you just threatened me. And this person has got, of course, it's like the weirdest clothes, the weirdest hair, the piercings. You do whatever you want, but stay out of the women's restroom if you're a man. That's my only ask. You know?
Are you threatening me?
You're threatening me.
Are you threatening me?
I'm
here right now to deal with a stolen vehicle. I ain't got time to hear you screaming and yelling.
I don't have time to constantly be abused.
We'll get OPD down here then, because I gotta work this stolen vehicle.
What do you mean OPD?
Alpha 73 University.
So he's like, I'm done with this. I'm trying to look into a stolen vehicle, and this trans person's like, okay, I'm gonna hand this off to somebody else.
Alpha 73.
Can we get another unit to deal with Jay Lee here? He is having a break.
Uh oh. Wait, listen. Listen.
Just say the right pronoun.
Uh oh.
7351.
Get down on the ground right now.
No.
He said he.
Yeah.
Because he's a he.
Right.
But he freaked out.
No.
You're about to get sprayed.
No. Just
get down on the ground.
So he's got pepper spray in his hand right now.
Come in there.
Leave me alone, please.
Okay. Are you gonna calm down?
I'm getting my phone out. I have to film this.
I'm telling you. Are you gonna calm down? No.
I think the cop's doing pretty
good
here.
He's doing a great job.
The trans dude is freaking out.
The pepper spray out of my face.
Alpha 73.
Leave me alone.
I have.
Just please.
Pepper spray.
Please. Just stop pointing the pepper spray at me. I will calm down if you do that. Stop crying. No.
I'm sorry. I love this so much. Okay, but you know, I'll let it fade out here. On a serious note, if that does not scream mental illness, I don't know what does. I mean, that there's one thing you can say, whether that person is a man or woman, whatever, that person is unhinged, like in a dangerous way. And that's what cops have to deal with
when a woman
is in a restroom and a man comes in the restroom and they complain. That's the kind of nonsense. And then my favorite part is the alleged misgendering, and the person just completely freaks out. Look, the thing with the trans community is they want this attention. They really do. They draw it to themselves. They want to be misgendered because they can have a moment like that. Now, in this particular case, it didn't work out so well for that person, I don't think. Someone else that it didn't work out so well for this weekend is Bryson DeChambeau at the British Open. It was a hell of a finish. It looked like it might be a playoff yesterday. It also looked like my guy, who I was going to bet on, Siwoo Kim, at plus 4,500, was going to win, and I was going to throw up, Sue, because I didn't place the bet. Thankfully, that didn't happen. But this controversy with Bryson has kind of blown up again, and people are still talking about it. Our golf expert, Dan Reardon, no relation.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mysteries Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up next. Well, there was a fair amount of competition for your sports viewing over the weekend with baseball back, with the World Cup, you know, wrapping up with third place game in the championship, and with the British Open as well. It was a hell of a finish, and a guy that I think a lot of Americans have never heard of, Ryan Fox, who's a Kiwi. He's ranked 56 in the world. He managed a birdie putt on 18 to make sure it didn't go to a playoff, and he wins the Open. But of course, the story of the weekend involves a guy named Bryson DeChambeau. We'll get to that here in a second. Dan Reardon, our golf expert, back with us this afternoon. Let's first, Dan, talk about the tournament itself before we get into the Bryson stuff, because this guy really did something incredible on Saturday. I think he was even, and he ended 8-under-62 on Saturday, tying for the lowest round ever at a major, and that put him in great position, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And let me mention about Ryan Fox. I have a friend who works for the PGA Tour in media and talked to him last year at the senior event. And as it turns out, he knew Ryan extremely well. He's only been on the tour for a short period of time and just couldn't stop saying nice things about him. And you always like to see somebody experience success who you know behind the scenes is really good. And the other thing is, you know, I don't know if you saw that putt live. But
I did. From the time Actually, that, I did.
From the time that Sam Burns holed out to the time that Ryan Fox hit his putt, somebody clocked it. It was 22 seconds
I know.
For him.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great example for everybody who plays the game.
There were a couple things that were going around on social media today about the speed at which he plays. And, you know, he was hung up on some tee boxes with some delays. But, yeah, he doesn't waste his time at all. And that was kind of interesting. And that putt, that was a big putt. Look, because if he doesn't hit that, then it goes into a playoff with Sam Burns, right?
Right. Oh, no. Cameron Young.
Oh, Cameron Young. I'm sorry. With Cameron Young. Yeah. But what would that have been? Do you know what the playoff is for the British Open?
I do. They do an aggregate playoff. It is not sudden death. They play, I believe, four holes.
Yes.
And the total after four holes. And that's been in place for quite a while. And you talk about the speed of play. Scottie Scheffler was quoted afterwards. He said he played with Ryan Fox a year ago, and they were in a threesome. And he said he plays so fast that he eventually commented to him. He said, "You play so fast, I feel like I'm playing in a twosome because you're never there."
I know. I did. I saw some of that stuff out there today, which is interesting. All right, let's talk about Bryson. Dan, you were here on Friday. We know he had this moment on the course. First, for people that don't know exactly what happened on Friday, maybe go over that, because he ends up in this long grass and he gets penalized two strokes because he did something he wasn't supposed to do, right?
Exactly. And those elements are simple and direct. They're not matters of opinion. His ball was lying in grass that was knee high. And he walks into that area, and he doesn't just walk by it. He literally goes in and stomps that grass down. And then he comes back again and stomps it one more time. That's beyond dispute. I mean, there's video of him doing that. So we know that he did that. And we know the rule in the game is you cannot alter anything that's still growing. In other words, you can't break a branch or move anything to improve your shot. So those two things are beyond dispute. So when Bryson goes back out to argue the point, And the suggestion is, he said, well, you know, that didn't make my swing any better. I guess if I was the official, I would say, if that's the case, why did you do it?
Yeah.
There's no other reason to do it. You know, I mean, he's not trying to give the television crew a better picture of his lie. He did it for a reason. And the reason was maybe not to gain an advantage, but he was just uncomfortable with that grass being there. And so when Rory is criticized, or has criticized, in this case, Bryson, he uses the right term. Bryson was being performative. He was a show at that time. And that's part of his shtick. That's part of who he is as a player and as an entertainer. And so to give him the two-stroke penalty, the other argument is, well, this goes on all the time on the tour, and it's not called. Well, I mean, you're a parent, Mark. If your daughter tells you, well, everybody else is doing it, do you think that's a valid excuse?
No, and she cheats in Uno, and I've caught her. So, absolutely, she's hiding cards between her legs, Dan. Let me play you what Rory said. This is a couple minutes, but I think it's worth hearing what he said about all this.
So, I was watching it live. I was up in the players' lounge watching it with a few other players, and as soon as he made the step into the ball, we all sort of looked at each other, and we're like, that didn't seem right. And then when I heard that he was called in by the rules officials, I think it was pretty obvious for why. I think there's no doubt that he improved the line of his backswing. So, you know, and again, it's like whether it was careless or whether it was intentional, I don't think it matters. Hopefully it was careless. But I think the two-shot penalty was justified for sure.
What do you think of the scenes after? Obviously, you guys were delayed getting your tea times as well because of it all going on.
Late night for everyone.
Yeah.
So this is where it gets interesting.
I won't pretend to be up here and defend Bryson. I'm not particularly fond of him. I think a lot of it's performative. I think a lot of it's for attention. And yeah, you know, to hold the tournament hostage like that and have all of us, volunteers, players, everyone waiting on him to depart, I didn't feel like it was a great look.
Do you think he knew what he was doing?
Look, he's going to say, like, again, I'm not in his mind, I'm not in his, but it didn't look good.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can. Just look, any expert that I followed when it comes to the specifics of the rules violation, everyone was in agreement. Nobody argued the point. And, you know, what happened throughout the rest of the weekend is Bryson's, you know, getting memes made of him with a weed whacker. And then he goes up at one point, Dan, and he tries to imitate a weed whacker. The frustration that I have, and I think I speak for many fans out there, is here's a guy I just couldn't stand in the world of golf many years ago. Then I got to know him a little bit, and he matured, seemingly, and he would do videos on YouTube, and he's, you know, done stuff with President Trump. He became a very likable figure, I thought. And then this happens, and it puts him right back in the jackass category.
Well, you know, and I'll play psychiatrist here. Because he plays on the LIV Tour, you get very little attention, certainly outside of your tournament site. And Bryson is somebody that thrives on attention.
Yes.
And he knew this weekend was the last time anybody's going to see him until the Masters next year. So it's natural for him to draw attention to himself. But I don't know, Mark, if you heard that in the exchange with the officials when he went back out there, he's reported to have said, I may call President Trump to see if he would intervene.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that because, look, Golf Week and other publications are reporting that. My question would be, two things. Did he really say that? And if he said it, did he say it jokingly because of the red card? I hope he didn't really say that in a non-joking way because that would be ridiculous. I could see him doing that in a smart-ass way with the officials because of what just happened with the World Cup, but I don't think he really, I don't know, Dan. I don't know.
And I don't either. And that's the other tragedy about Bryson. Bryson doesn't talk to the press. He has a website writer that he spoke to at length during the week. And he spoke to one official from the RNA after a round. But other than that, I looked it up. The last time Bryson has done a press conference was before the Masters. He did one press conference. Since that time, everything else he has done has only been done in the context of the LIV Tour. And so, you know, when people are critical of him, the opportunity to get that out in front of the public is in a head-to-head confrontation, conversation with the people in the media. And you know, quite honestly, the media are very sympathetic to Bryson. He doesn't get harsh treatment at all from the media, except when he gets into these kind of circumstances.
Yeah. No, I think he's been doing real well. This was just like a step back, and he made it worse than it had to be. And that, I think, is maybe the frustrating part. All right, so here we are now, and we're just kind of closing in very quickly on a BMW championship at Belrive Country Club, aren't we?
Yeah, I think the last weekend put us 1 month away from that weekend in August when we have the tour of town. And I say over and over again, for people who are fans of golf, you know, realize that this is a once in, you know, a decade opportunity, because we know that the next thing coming to St. Louis is 2030, and that's the President's Cup, and that's a small field. So even if Belrive continues to be active, they're not going to see. And the other thing is, all the majors are booking out 15, 20 years in advance now. You can look up the date.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that.
U.S. Open. So, I mean, there's nothing there sitting out there for you. And so you let that opportunity pass. Yes, you can get on a plane and fly someplace. You can go to Pebble Beach next year. You can go to St. Andrews next year. You can't get out of your car and walk into the entrance of Belrive. You can't do that anywhere else. And this is your last opportunity for at least a decade to see the performers in person. And, Mark, I'm going to tell you the same thing I've told Tom Ackerman. I'll tell anybody that plays the game. Just take one moment to stand behind any tee on the course at Belrive.
Yeah.
Rory hit a drive. It's worth whatever the price of admission is if you play the game to see that kind of talent right in front of you. It's hard to describe. You cannot get the feeling from television. You can only get that sense in person. I've had the pleasure of seeing that a number of times, and always found it awesome to see.
It's almost like that moment 4 weeks ago when I crushed my drive at 18 at Bellerive, clearing the bunkers with 98 to the hole, and then I, of course, bogeyed it, Dan. But I did have a great drive. I think it was on ESPN. Look, this is always great to catch up with you. By the way, BMWChampionship.com. Check out the website. Get your tickets. If you're a BMW owner, your key fob affords you some nice things and cool things. Dan, we'll talk soon. I appreciate it.
Enjoyed it,
Mark. All right, thanks. Audio cut of the day coming up. All right, as I think I pointed out earlier, we got a big show tomorrow. Tom Albus, who is the U.S. attorney for this part of the state, is going to join us, talk a little bit about crime and punishment, I suppose, because those two things kind of fall hand in hand and come together. Also, Hans von Spakovsky. I read an interesting, and I shared this on the air with the audience a little earlier, if you missed this in the 5 o'clock hour. Lisa Murkowski, who is a Republican, but very moderate senator from the state of Alaska, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal today explaining her reasons that she would vote against the SAVE Act. There were actually some legitimate reasons that I want to ask Hans about. He's a big supporter. We'll do that tomorrow. We have been trying to get the candidates for St. Charles County Executive on the air. Jason Law and Bill Eigel were with us last week at 5:04 on a couple of different days. Steve Ellman, who is the incumbent, trying to keep that position, even though at one point he said he was not going to run, he'll be with us tomorrow at 5:04. George Rosenthal. George will do Tech Talk Tuesdays tomorrow from ThrottleNet. That's always a great time.
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, we've had now a couple of U.S. servicemen killed in Iran. There is fighting that goes back and forth. Kuwait's involved now. A lot of stuff going on. The president says we're going to bomb them. I thought this was a good question from Maria Bartiromo.
You know, CENTCOM says that there will be outsized action in retaliation, but I don't understand how it's possible that Iran has the capabilities to fight this way and continue to try to lash out at Gulf countries and U.S. military bases, because the U.S. has obliterated Iran's military, and the president continues to reiterate that.
I'm very curious about that question myself. I don't understand it. I don't see how the president can keep saying that, and they can keep lobbing missiles and bombs and still, you know, have something, at least seemingly, to their military. So here's Victoria Coates with the answer.
Yes, and if you look at the numbers of missiles that they've been able to fire off from the beginning of this war, you know, late February, early March, and what they're able to do now, it is very seriously degraded. They've gone from over 100 a day to less than 10, if even that. There have been a number of days where they haven't fired off anything, and they haven't targeted Israel for months now. So I think their capabilities are lessened, but they're not zero, and that's the important thing. They are a nuisance. They're going after their regional neighbors. And that, in a way, though, can also, in the long term, be a benefit for us, Maria, because this unites the entire region behind the United States and with Israel. That would have been impossible 10 years ago. Now it's actually happening in real time.
Okay, that might be a valid point, but still questions about how we can keep bombing and not have more of an effect. And then there's Bill Maher. I played a couple of bites from him earlier. Look, he told Jonathan Carl from ABC News his vote is in play because the Democrats have gone so crazy with communism.
You told J.D. Vance you're open, your vote is up for grabs.
Yes, my vote is in play because it can't be Trump running. Mm-hmm. So I'm not living in communist America. I mean, I know the talking point is that, well, it's not communism, it's socialism. Okay, I've read the quotes from the DSA platform, from their own mouths. Don't tell me I'm not seeing what I am seeing. And DSA, again, they say things like, you know, takeover of key industries, government. That's communism.
Yeah, and it's dangerous. And I give Bill Maher a lot of credit for going out there on the ledge that most Democrats won't even dabble with right now. And it's pretty scary. So there you go. Audio cut of the day.
Get more at 971talk.com.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.